Hey, nosy neighbors, it's Kylie.
And I'm Mary.
And you're listening to Sipping with Snapped, a true crime podcast. Welcome.
Morning.
Hey.
It's funny because I say morning all the time, even if it's 7 o'clock at night.
Morning. Clearly evening.
People are like, wait, do you know what time it is?
Yes, I do. It's just habit. I just wish that I had the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm. Can we start over?
Yeah, exactly. In my head, I'm just starting over every time I greet somebody.
Yes.
Morning.
I
can't believe we're like basically midway through December.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, it's going so fast.
I guess I should start my Christmas shopping.
I know. But Christmas shopping is so different now. Mm-hmm. Because it's primarily online.
I know.
So it's different because I think that too, and then I'm like, oh yeah, I already ordered.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like that weird, yeah. Like, huh, it's different.
Yeah.
Remember going to like the Black Friday deals at 4 a.m.?
I loved that. Right now it's just trading gift cards with my sisters.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I remember
it's kinda boring.
Feeling like such an adult when I was allowed to go with you because we got up so early to get out there, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm there, I'm in line, because it was all mm-hmm. adults pretty much. There were no children because that's who they were shopping
oh, yes.
for.
Well, I brought you with because we could get two for one.
Oh yeah,
because it's one per person, so you were like my two, you were my plus one.
Yes, exactly. Oh yeah, I was there just as an associate so that you could bypass the loophole yes. of how many things to buy. But I like to think it was because I was mature.
Oh, yes. Yes. Wink, wink. You were.
Uh-huh. I was so mature. But yeah, like buying my random items half price. Oh,
so much fun. So much fun. My sisters and I, we are making each other Harry Potter ornaments. And we've been doing that for about 8 years now.
That's awesome. See, that's fun because when you get to be an adult, and especially when you don't live by somebody all the time, you don't know what they need or want.
Mm-hmm.
And something niche like that, it's a better than trading a gift card.
Oh, yeah. We're all Harry Potter fans. So having homemade ornaments is just, it's really fun. It's a fun thing.
And you went as far as to create a whole tree, right?
Oh, yes. All three of us have our own Harry Potter tree. That's it.
Because the tradition has carried on.
Yeah, it's super fun. Super fun. It's just fun.
It's so cool. You should share it. I think other Harry Potter lovers would love it.
Oh, thank you.
So tonight, I'm drinking the Naughty or Nice.
Ooh.
Yes. It includes 3 ounces of Chardonnay.
Uh-huh.
3 ounces of Pinot Noir.
Okay.
2 ounces of Cognac.
Uh-huh.
2 ounces maraschino liqueur.
Ooh.
4 ounces of ginger ale.
Ooh.
And you mix it, not too much because there's carbonation.
Yes.
And then garnish with orange slices. I always have to warn just because I have, you know, tried to shake something with soda before and
oh, yeah.
made a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And
pour it over ice?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I know you wouldn't think like Pinot Noir, but it's more of a, it's like a wine medley, sort of.
It's a mixer.
Yes.
Yummy.
And where did we get our wines from?
We got it from Rockets Bug Juice Gardens. 2 T's and Rockets.
Yes. So that's why we were able to choose 3 different kinds.
And it's a wine shop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at 1402 Donovan Valley Road in Birmingham. And they're open Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 4. So if you're in the area, go visit.
Yes, they've got a super cool staff.
So, face of the case.
Yes, our face of the case, Joanna Claire Yates, was born on April 19th, 1985,
mm-hmm.
to David and Teresa Yates in Hampshire, England.
Ooh, England.
She went by Jo. Yes, we're back in England again.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas. We already know that she's a feisty, determined girl by her date of birth.
Yes.
She was privately educated at Embley Park and studied for her A-levels at Peter Simons College.
Mm-hmm.
A-levels are a UK subject-based qualification for students 16 and older.
Oh.
Because I was like, what are they? They're usually studied for over 2 years, leading to qualifications recognized for entrance to higher education institutes in the UK and many others worldwide.
So it's kind of like the equivalent to the English, well, the American SAT?
So I can't tell if it's like an AP class because you study for it.
Oh,
that, and
yeah,
that's accepted at a college, you know, for college credit. Mm-hmm. Or if it's like getting a diploma, like a GED, you finished all of these, so like you could start your education early.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like if you completed your A levels at 16,
you're above the curve,
boy, girl, genius. Yeah, exactly.
All right.
And so I can't tell. If you know, if you're over there, please let us know.
Yes.
Because I kept reading different definitions and can't quite sort it.
I don't get it.
Yes, because after this, Joe graduated with a degree in landscape architecture from Riddle College and received her postgraduate diploma in landscape architecture from the University of Gloucestershire.
Oh, Gloucester.
Gloucestershire?
Gloucester. Say it with your Boston accent.
Gloucestershire.
Landscape architecture. That's really cool. I would love to do that.
Right, actually.
Hey, hence Rocket Spunk Juice Gardens.
Yes. Circle back to that. Not only do they sell wine, people, they sell plants.
A garden shop.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Forgot to mention the big, beautiful part of it. I stuttered there.
The zen.
Yeah.
It's the zen.
In December 2008, Joe met a 25-year-old architect named Greg Reardon,
mm-hmm,
at the firm Highland Edgar Driver in Winchester.
Okay.
They fell in love and the couple moved in together in 2009, settling in Bristol when the company relocated there.
Okay.
Joe later changed jobs to work at the Building Design Partnership, also located in Bristol. The couple moved again into a flat. I feel so British when I say flat.
Into a flat.
Which is just an apartment, mm-hmm, but I'm still going to call it a flat throughout the episode.
Oh, totally do. Mm-hmm. That's fun.
At 44 Kenji? I don't know. Road in the city's Clifton suburb. In October 2010.
Okay.
It was a large house that had been subdivided into several flats.
Okay.
So it's something we see around here all the time.
Oh, yeah.
The landlord, Chris Jeffries, lived there, as well as another couple, Vincent Tabak and his girlfriend, Tanya Morrison.
Okay.
So two couples and the landlord
in the flat
apartment building.
Okay.
You know what I mean? They each had their own flat within the divided house.
Okay.
Christmas was Joe's favorite time of year.
Mm-hmm.
On December 17th, 2010, she planned to spend the coming weekend baking and shopping for the holiday while Greg was away visiting family in Sheffield for the weekend.
Okay.
When Greg returned Sunday night around 8 p.m., Joe wasn't home.
Hmm.
He had trouble getting in touch with her all weekend, but I just assumed she was busy with her holiday to-do list for the party the couple was planning, and plus he'd be back home soon anyways.
Oh.
He also found that their cat appeared not to have been fed. He immediately called Joe's mobile phone, and I'm sure his heart sank when he heard it ring from inside her coat pocket.
Oh, no.
Greg also discovered Joanna's purse, glasses, and keys were all in the flat.
Okay.
At around 12 a.m. on December 18th, he reported Joanna missing to police and her parents.
Yeah.
It's not reported, but I'm sure that in those few hours, he was calling friends and doing all of those checks before calling in the big guns.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, hey, have you seen her? Hey, have you seen her? Hey, have you heard from her?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Just to make sure, like, oh, you didn't scoop her up and bring her away real quick, mm-hmm, and she's coming back.
Yeah. Wishful thinking.
Yeah. At the flat, investigators found the receipt for a pizza Joanna had purchased, but the pizza nor its packaging were recovered.
Mm-hmm.
There were two bottles of cider recovered, one partly consumed and the other unopened.
Okay.
There were no signs of forced entry, nor signs of a disturbance having taken place inside the flat. So what had happened that weekend.
Oh, no.
December 17th was a Friday, and the atmosphere was festive. Investigators determined that evening Jo had joined her colleagues for after-work drinks at the Bristol Ram Pub on Park Street.
Mm-hmm.
She told her friends and colleagues that she was not looking forward to spending the weekend alone, as it would be her first time in the flat without Greg.
Oh, no.
She planned to spend her time baking in preparation for a party the couple would be throwing the following week and shopping for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Jo left the Ram Pub at around 8 p.m. to begin the 30-minute walk home.
Okay.
Which sounds crazy, but I guess it's really normal to walk.
Oh, yeah.
Like 30 minutes or so back and forth.
Oh, people in Europe walk everywhere.
Yeah. At first I was like, mm-hmm. dang. Like, I understand like having a warm liquor jacket on.
Yes.
Right?
Well, 30 minutes, that's only about 2 miles.
That's true. When you think about it mm-hmm. and when you know it in your head, you're like, ah, oh, it's just up over the corner.
Yeah. I mean, the average person, it's like a 15-minute mile if you're walking.
Yep.
Actually, that's a quick walk.
I know. I was going to say, I do a 15-minute mile.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it's probably just over a mile wherever mm-hmm. she's going.
Yeah.
Well, we know where she's going home. On her way home, surveillance footage showed her going into a Waitrose supermarket and leaving around 8:10 without having bought anything.
Oh.
Because it's 2010, there's CCTV footage everywhere over there.
Yes. Yes. Maybe she was cold.
Yeah, right? And just needed to warm up.
Mm-hmm.
That's so true. I haven't heard in all of my things anyone suggest that.
It is December. Brr.
At 8:30, yeah, she called her friend Rebecca as she walked and arranged to meet up on Christmas Eve.
Okay.
Joanna was seen again on surveillance footage around 8:40 at a Tesco Express, which is like a 7-Eleven.
Okay.
Where she bought a pizza.
So it's a convenience store.
Yes.
Okay.
But one that offers, like, the pizza that she bought was not already made. She was gonna have to put it in the oven to cook it.
Okay.
So the one that kind of has, like, you know, food options more.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Like a Circle K.
Yeah.
Or a Quick Trip. Quick Trip.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Or yeah, any of those.
Mm-hmm.
She then went to an off-license Bargain Booze next door, purchasing 2 bottles of cider.
Nice.
Right? Leaving the bar, getting your mm-hmm. pizza, something to drink with it.
Couple ciders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the night.
Let's go and have fun by myself and bake.
Yeah, right? Like, I've had enough to drink out. I just want to settle in and watch a show.
Yeah. Christmas Hallmark movie.
Oh my gosh, for sure. So good.
Mm-hmm.
Investigators confirmed Greg's alibi and also examined Greg's laptop and mobile phone.
Mobile.
As part of standard protocol. I know that. There's just some words that they say and you're like, yes, that sounds so right.
Yeah. Trainers. Oh, and the jumper.
Right. And you're like, oh, mm-hmm. why didn't we keep that over here? Why did we change it?
Yes. I want those.
Nothing incriminating was found.
Okay.
So Greg was cleared.
Okay.
Greg and Joe's friends set up a website and used social networking services to help look for her.
Mm-hmm.
By December 21st, no further clues to Jo's whereabouts had surfaced.
Okay.
Joanna's parents, David and Teresa, made an emotional plea during a press conference where they voiced their disbelief at her sudden disappearance.
Yeah, those are so heartbreaking.
Oh, right? Because yeah. You just imagine your own kid. Mm-hmm. And just losing sight of your kid for a second makes my heart race. So
mm-hmm.
when they're able to leave on their own, that's going to be a whole different thing. Ugh.
Crushing. Just crushing.
They asked that Joanna please get in touch, expressing their love for her and their concern for her safety. They were accompanied by Joanna's brother, Chris, and her boyfriend, Greg.
Okay.
By the 23rd, Joanna's family and Greg were becoming increasingly convinced that the worst had happened. Joanna had been missing for 6 days. Her father expressed his fears that Joanna may have been abducted from her flat after returning home.
Yeah.
Investigators were also operating under the assumption she knew whoever took her based on the lack of forced entry.
Okay.
On the 24th, they released the CCTV footage of Jo pieing the pizza to the public.
Okay.
Just to spark anything.
Like, have you seen this? Did you see this happen?
Exactly. Like, were you over here at the shop too? Like, did you see what happened after this?
Mm-hmm.
But on Christmas Day, Joe's loved one's worst nightmare was confirmed.
Oh, no.
A couple out walking their dog, which...
Dog walker.
To point that out. That morning along Longwood Lane, Phelan, which was about 3 miles or 4.8 kilometers from Joe's flat.
Okay.
They discovered a body on the side of the road, which was clothed and covered in snow.
That's so sad.
On the 26th, it was confirmed that the body found was Joanna's. The postmortem examination also began that day, but results were delayed due to the body being frozen.
Oh.
So they weren't really able to complete the autopsy yet.
Okay.
They had to let her thaw out.
It could have preserved, which is good.
Yeah, exactly. Snow is a fickle beast because if it had not snowed, because obviously it was on top of her, then she would have been found earlier.
Oh.
But it also...
gives a date. Or time.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
The investigation called, quote, Operation Braid.
Oh.
Was compromised. I know. I was like, that's interesting.
Did she have braids?
She had blonde hair, blue eyes. Uh-huh. But her hair, I don't know if it was in a braid when she went missing. And all the photos I saw, it was straight blonde hair.
Okay.
About shoulder length.
Okay.
So it was comprised of 80 detectives and civilian staff under the direction of Detective Chief Inspector Phil Jones.
Okay.
It was one of the largest police operations in Castleberry's history. Detective Jones urged the public to come forward with any information to help catch the killer.
Kylie just threw her cat. Well, I shouldn't say that because of FIFA or whatever.
PETA, Mike, come over.
PETA.
I just one-armed. Well, okay. She'd been like flirting with going on the laptop a few times. Like, I might do it. I might do it.
I'm going to pause you.
Here's my paw. Yes. And then she's like, I'm going to come and do everything you've ever done. And so I just kind of like strong-armed.
That was awesome.
It was just a push. And I didn't break eye contact at all. And I think that's where the humor comes in.
Yes. You just kept on going.
So... sorry, Belle. She's all right. She's cuddled over there now.
Oh, yeah.
If you have a cat, you know it's that point when they've been messing with your laptop for too long and you've just got to get them to get. Detective Jones urged the public to come forward with any information to help catch the killer, especially potential witnesses who were in the vicinity of Longwood Lane and Phelan's in the period before her body was discovered.
Okay.
He stated that the investigation was also seeking the driver of a, quote, light-colored 4x4 vehicle for questioning.
A 4x4? Like a four-wheel drive?
I guess.
Okay.
The whole community wanted to be involved.
Okay.
The investigators were getting thousands of calls and exhausting every lead.
Mm-hmm.
Police examined over 100 hours of surveillance footage along with 293 tons, which is 293,000 kilograms of rubbish seized from the area around Joan Gregg's flat.
Holy cow.
Crime Stoppers offered a 10,000 euro... 10,000 pound.
Yeah.
10,000 pound reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of her murderer.
Uh-huh.
While the Sun newspaper offered 50,000 pounds.
Oh, wow.
Authorities advised people living in the area to secure their homes and warned women not to walk alone after dark.
Yeah.
And this is definitely when they all had holiday plans.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's helter skelter right now.
Mm-hmm. By the 28th, the pathologist was able to complete the autopsy and determined that the cause of death was strangulation.
Okay.
The postmortem indicated that she had died several days before being discovered. The examination also confirmed that Joe did not eat the pizza she had purchased.
Oh, yeah.
This is my second case where the victim bought pizza and didn't eat it.
As soon as you die, you don't digest anything, so they know about what time.
Exactly. But the pizza wasn't recovered at the scene.
Oh.
So once again, the killer killed and ate.
Killed for the pizza.
Mm-hmm.
That's heartbreaking and how rude.
There was no evidence that Joe had been sexually assaulted. She was fully clothed. However, she was not wearing a coat and had one sock missing.
Oh.
The sock was a long gray ski sock. It was not found in her flat or anywhere near where her body was discovered.
Oh.
So it became an important part of the investigation because detectives believe the killer may have kept it as a trophy. Also, there was a small amount of unknown DNA found on her body.
Okay.
Yes. For whatever reason, they're unable to say whether it was a little bit of semen, a little bit of saliva, a little bit of what.
Oh, yeah.
Which makes me wonder how they get all of the stuff, but somehow there was a speck of DNA on her.
A speck. That's a needle in a haystack.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Detectives from the Avon and Somerset Castleberry issued an appeal for anyone with information to come forward and investigated similarities with other unsolved cases.
Okay.
In particular interest of the to them were those of 20-year-old Glennis Caruthers, who was strangled in 1974.
Uh-huh.
Melanie Hall, who was 25, disappeared in 1996, and whose body was discovered 13 years later.
Oh, wow.
And 35-year-old Claudia Lawrence, who went missing in 2009.
Oh.
But none of them proved to be connected.
I wonder if those were solved.
No, so those are other unsolved cases.
I wonder if they're solved now.
Oh, I see. You're right. We should look into that.
Mm-hmm.
A young woman attending a party at a neighboring house on that same road. Mm-hmm. The night of Joe's disappearance recalled hearing two loud screams shortly after 9 p.m. coming from the direction of Joe's flat.
Oh.
Another neighbor who lived behind Joe and Greg's home said he heard a woman's voice scream, "Help me." Although he couldn't exactly recall when in the night the incident occurred.
How terrifying. Could you imagine you can scream and you do scream hoping somebody comes to your rescue and nobody comes?
Yes. It's a real Kitty Genovese bystander effect.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Officers removed the front door to Joe's flat to check for clothing fibers and DNA evidence.
Okay.
Because now they believed that possibly the perpetrator had entered the flat before she'd even returned home on Friday night.
Oh.
Then suddenly, shortly after 7 a.m. on December 30th, 2010, Christopher Jeffries, Joanna's landlord, who lived in another flat, the same building, was arrested on suspicion of her murder.
Well, the landlord has keys to all.
Yep, all of, able to get in anywhere and cause to.
That big keychain.
Jingle, jangle.
Jingle, jangle.
It's not Santa.
It's creepy.
It's the landlord.
Creepy landlord.
Yep. He was taken to a local police station for questioning while forensic investigators inspected his flat. Christopher Jeffries was a 65-year-old retired English teacher at a local private school, Clifton College, and well-known in the community.
That's awful.
Jeffries was Joanna and Greg's landlord, and he lived in the flat above them.
Okay.
He was active with the local liberal Democrats, helping out in election campaigns, and was also heavily involved in the neighborhood watch in Clifton.
Oh.
But he was an eccentric character, sometimes making bold statements, such as dyeing his hair blue.
I love that word.
Yes. Former students described him as an unconventional but inspiring teacher.
Okay.
If you look at a photo of this guy, he's got wild gray hair. Think of like the character from Emily in Paris.
Yes.
The Frenchman with his wild gray hair.
Okay.
That's what he looks like.
Oh, that's funny.
Not the face, but that hair.
Mm-hmm. Einstein hair.
Yes. Yes. That's it.
Yeah.
Jeffries became involved with the murder investigation of Joanna Yates when he was questioned over claims he'd made to neighbors about seeing three people when he had drove up outside the flat around 9 p.m.
Okay.
The neighbors told investigators that Jeffries had said he saw Joanna. However, he clarified he didn't say he saw Joanna. He just said that he saw some people.
Okay.
On December 31st, the day after the arrest, a senior officer granted investigators a 12-hour extension to the arrest enabling them to hold him in custody for additional questioning.
Okay.
Police subsequently applied to magistrates for further extensions, which were granted on December 31st and January 1st. So investigators were able to detain him as a suspect for up to 96 hours.
Oh.
But eventually released Jeffries on bail after 2 days.
Oh.
The media had a field day over his arrest. There really was no other reason other than the fact that Jeffries was admittedly odd-looking and eccentric.
They're judging a book by its cover.
There were a range of defamatory headlines splashed across the front pages of the UK magazines, like The Sun, Daily Mail, and Daily Mirror.
Yeah.
Including Professor Strange, the strange Mr. Jeffries, landlord who murdered Joanna Yates, and suspect Peeping Tom.
That's so sad, because once they're on the front page, it's hard to erase them.
Exactly. So, once he was no longer a suspect in the murder investigation, Jeffries sued 8 UK newspapers for libel.
Well, yeah, and then he had to move.
I know, but he did win. He received substantial damages from the papers, as well as a public apology from police.
Yeah, it's slander.
A slander, and they kept extending his stay. They arrested him and just held him there forever.
Yeah.
And treated him poorly, just, I mean, like we assumed as well. Like, oh my God, of course it's the landlord. He's got a key.
Oh, yes.
Like,
yes.
I thought the same thing. I'm like, duh. And then it turns out it's not him. And you're like, oh, sorry. My bad. It just looked really, it looked like it was going to fit.
If the key fits. Sorry.
On January 9th, 2011, Bristol East MP Carrie McCarthy gave her support to the idea of public DNA screening process if the police found it useful. So,
okay.
It pretty much, they could ask all the dudes around for their DNA.
Okay.
They had conducted mass DNA screening during the 1995 investigation, one of those ones that we had said of Louise Smith. And Carrie McCarthy suggested that the screening process should be extended beyond Clifton to the wider Bristol area.
Oh, wow.
So that little speck of DNA that had been found on Joe's body was tested for a potential profile.
Okay.
Detectives also began tracking the movements of several hundred registered sex offenders living within their jurisdiction to determine the individual's whereabouts on December 17th.
Okay.
So I guess once their view widened to beyond the landlord, they started actually looking around.
Yes. Once they took the blinders off.
In January 2011, a reconstruction of the case was filmed on location in Bristol for broadcast.
Oh.
For the January 26th edition of BBC television program Crime Watch. The reconstruction of Joanna Yates's last moments were filmed on January 18th, and the filming of it was featured on the news.
Okay.
Like when they were like, they're filming The Departed on the South Shore. You know?
Yes. Come watch.
So within 24 hours of news coverage about the production, over 300 people contacted the police with tips.
Oh.
A breakthrough led investigators to believe that Joe's body may have been transported in a large suitcase. Then, on the morning of January 20th, the police arrested 32-year-old Vincent Tebeck, who lived with his girlfriend in the flat next door to Joe and Greg.
No.
So they had arrested the wrong neighbor.
The wrong apartment sharer. Flat share.
Right. Two cars, one set of ties. Two neighbors, only one murderer.
Ooh.
Following Vincent's arrest, the BBC canceled its plans to air the reenactment on Crime Watch.
Oh.
So they did all that for an episode, but...
Oh, in the can.
I know. It did what they wanted before they could even air it. Vincent Tebeck was a 32-year-old Dutch national who was working in Bristol as an engineer.
Oh.
Vincent Tebeck was born on February 10th, 1978, and the youngest of 5 siblings.
Oh, that youngest.
I know, right? Always.
Always the youngest. Kidding, I'm kidding.
I wonder if there's a study of killers and birth order.
Ooh.
I know.
Let's not cause any red flags here.
I know, but just something I thought of. He was raised in Uden, which is in the Netherlands, but lived and worked in the United Kingdom since 2007.
Okay.
He and his girlfriend had moved into the flat in 2009, mm-hmm. which was the year prior to Joe.
Oh, yeah.
Police originally knocked on Vincent Tabak's door around 4 a.m. on December 18th. That night, well, I guess early morning after Greg had reported Joanna missing.
Oh.
He was asked if he knew anything of Joanna's disappearance, and he replied that he did not.
Yeah.
Then on the 23rd, police returned and searched his flat.
Mm-hmm.
He was cooperative, and nothing of interest in the investigation was found during the search.
Okay.
Afterwards, Vincent and his girlfriend traveled to Cambridge to stay with their family on the 24th.
Oh, because it's Christmas.
Yep.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So it's not too
suspicious.
Sus that he got the hell out of Bristol.
Mm-hmm.
The same day, Vincent spoke to a detective on the phone,
mm-hmm.
saying that he had been in all evening until he went to pick up his girlfriend in the early morning of the 18th after a night out.
Okay.
He also told them he did not know his neighbor, Joanna, because they had just moved in October.
So he was home alone.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
After Christmas, on the 28th, Vincent and Tanya drove to Holland to spend New Year's with his family.
Oh, I think I'll go to Holland today.
I know. Because they're all driving distance from each other.
That's so cool.
Yeah, they took something called a Euro tunnel. I was like, you just get on one highway and you're there? Dang.
That's so cool.
The two watched a news report while in Holland about the fact Jeffries had been arrested on the suspicion of murder.
Oh.
Vincent decided to call detectives and give them some additional information. He said he saw...
To throw the heat off of him.
Uh-huh. He saw Jeffries' car facing in different directions at different points over the course of the evening.
Oh.
Implying that Jeffries had gone out a few times during the night that Joe had disappeared.
Liar.
DC Karen Thomas flew to Holland the next day to interview Vincent about this.
Uh-huh.
They spoke for 6 hours, and the longer they talked, the more Vincent began to appear suspicious.
Oh.
He changed his version of what he did that night, saying that as well as going to get his girlfriend,
uh-huh.
he also went out to take photos of the snow and went to Asda, which is a store.
Okay.
A grocery store.
Okay.
He also appeared overly curious about the forensic examinations which were taking place.
Inserting himself in the investigation.
Mm-hmm. At DC Thomas's request, Vincent gave a DNA sample and was fingerprinted.
Okay.
DNA tests were carried out by LGC Forensics, a private company which undertakes forensic analysis for criminal investigations.
Okay.
Lindsay Lennon, a body fluids and DNA specialist member of the team, analyzed DNA samples from Joanna Yates's body and said that although the DNA swabs matched Vincent Tabak,
uh-huh.
they were not of sufficient quality to be evaluated.
Oh, that was tiny.
Yes.
Teeny tiny speck. Okay.
The team deployed a method known as DNA sense, which enhances unusable DNA samples through purification and concentration.
So it makes it bigger? The sample bigger?
Yes.
Okay.
So, quote, we couldn't say whether the DNA was from saliva, semen, or even touch.
Okay.
But we could say the probability of it not being a match with Tabak
mm-hmm.
was less than 1 billion.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they like, if that makes sense.
Okay.
They were like, unfortunately, science, we can't say 100%, but.
So they had the DNA.
Mm-hmm.
They diluted it somehow to make it a bigger sample.
Yes.
But they couldn't pinpoint where the DNA came from.
Yeah, exactly. So they're like, gotcha. His DNA is on her.
Okay.
After questioning during 96 hours of detention, Vincent Tabak was charged on January 22nd, 2011 with the murder of Joanna Yates.
Oh, wow. That's pretty quick.
Yeah. I mean, everybody was up in arms about this over there. It was someone that was taken from her home in the holiday season, you know?
That's so sad.
Yes. He made a brief appearance at Bristol's Magistrates Court on January 24th and was remanded in custody.
Okay.
Meaning that he had to stay in jail until his trial.
Okay.
He was moved from Bristol prison.
Well, because he could flee.
Yeah.
He's from the Netherlands. He's got places he could go.
Exactly. We saw that he like almost, I mean, if he didn't call and insert himself, who's to say what would have happened here?
He'd be in the Netherlands right now.
He was moved from the Bristol prison because of fears for his safety, because everyone was Team Joe, obviously.
Yeah.
And he was also placed under suicide watch at Long Larton Prison near Evesham.
Oh, okay.
Initially, Vincent maintained he was not responsible for Joanna Yates' death.
Okay.
He claimed that the evidence linking him to the crime had been fabricated by corrupt officials.
Okay.
However, on February 8th, he told Peter Brotherton, who was the prison chaplain, that he had killed her and intended.
He confessed.
Yes. He believed the conversation would be private, but it was just a chaplain. Oh. He's not a father.
Wasn't a lawyer.
Yeah. Wasn't one of those people that have that confidentiality thing.
Mm-hmm.
So on May 5th, 2011, Vincent Tabak finally pleaded guilty to the manslaughter of Joanna Yates, but still denied murdering her.
Oh.
His plea of guilty to manslaughter was rejected by the Crown Prosecution Service, and the murder trial was rightfully set for October.
Okay. Okay.
So he tried to be like, okay, I'm guilty of manslaughter. And they were like, no.
Of manslaughter.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to do it.
It just happened.
It just happened. Gotcha.
The trial began on October 4th at Bristol Crown Court. It was led by Judge Mr. Justice Field with Nigel Lickley, QC, as prosecutor, and William Clegg, QC, defending Vincent.
Okay.
It would last just over 3 weeks.
Okay.
During the trial, details emerged of the moment just after Joanna's disappearance when the police had knocked on Vincent's door.
Okay.
According to one officer, he'd appear calm, unlike his girlfriend, who had showed extreme concern.
Like, what are you doing here?
After initially being ruled out as a suspect, Vincent had been allowed, as we know, to go to Holland.
Yeah, for his holiday.
Yep. And then he contacted with the information. So pretty much all of this was evidence in the trial that he contacted them with the information, the false lead.
Yeah.
As the trial continued, Joanna's parents were finally able to get answers to what happened to their daughter on the night of December 17th.
Okay.
Or at least according to Vincent.
Because
according to him, he had no intention of killing her.
Okay.
He stated that he was walking by her flat and she made a, quote, flirty comment to him, invited him over for a drink. Which, looking at her and looking at him, no way, Jose. She was out of his league. He has, like, some of those Will Poulter funky eyebrows, you know, that go up.
Okay.
The guy that's from, like, We Are the Millers, who gets, like, bit by the spider and stuff.
Oh, yes. Yes. He's actually cute. He's in The Bear.
Oh, yes. Now he is.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Like, that guy is cuter, but he has those eyebrows with, like, little eyes and glasses.
Awkward.
Yeah, he's way awkward and she's way cute.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that she was like, hey,
okay,
the love of my life is out of town. Why don't you come over?
Want some pizza? Yeah. He probably still ate the pizza.
Right? They always do. Once inside her flat, he misread the situation and tried to kiss her. Joanna screamed.
Oh,
to
no.
Stop her screaming, he put his hand over her mouth.
Oh, no.
He removed his hand, but she continued to scream. So he put his hand back over her mouth and another around her throat and held it there unintentionally, causing her death.
Oh, God.
Claiming that he only did it for about 20 seconds.
No. Takes a lot longer to choke someone.
Yes, we all know that it's minutes for strangulation to take place.
You could stop. He could have stopped.
Yes, but during the trial, he claimed it was only 20 seconds, so there was a moment where they had everybody be silent for 20 seconds to even just show how long that was. I can't imagine being in, anytime there's a moment of silence, it's so powerful.
Yeah.
And to know that that's what it represented.
Oh. Or hold your breath for 20 seconds.
Yeah, right? The pathologist, Dr. Delaney, revealed that Joe suffered 43 injuries during the struggle that ended her life.
Poor Joe.
Yeah, that's not just 20 seconds of holding your hand over her mouth. No. Like, that's way different, and evidence doesn't lie.
That's horrible.
He showed photographs to the jury of a red bruise mark around her neck and on her chin and blood underneath her nose. He made the jury aware that these injuries were sustained during her life while her heart was beating.
Yeah, they could tell that. That's amazing to me.
This wasn't afterwards when he was trying to get rid of the body.
Mm-hmm.
He also went on to say that Vincent would have seen her struggling to breathe.
Ugh.
Prosecutor Lickley pointed out that Vincent was a foot taller than Joanna.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was not a fair fight.
No.
He could have removed his hand and saved her.
Yeah.
He chose not to, which meant she endured a slow and painful death.
Poor Joe.
According to his defense, Vincent panicked, and instead of calling the police, he calmly turned the oven off and took out the pizza. Does that not sound like an oxymoron to you? Or he panicked, so he made pizza.
He panicked, so he got the... He was hungry.
Yeah, he panicked, so he decided not to let the food burn.
Yeah.
Priority number one.
Mm-hmm.
He carried Joanna's body to his flat next door and stored it in a bicycle cover. He then placed...
In a what?
A bicycle cover.
Oh. I'm assuming... Like a sheet thingy that covers a bike.
Yeah, maybe. like a travel... Okay. Kind of like what you would put... Like, a guitar into, but I guess it would be a bike. Yeah.
Yes.
You know.
Bigger.
He then placed the body in the boot of his car.
The boot.
There's another word right there.
Mm-hmm.
And took a trip to his local Asda in Bedminster. Asda is a grocery store.
Yes.
So he was definitely trying to be seen on TV.
Yes. That's where she went.
She went to a different grocery store, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
Fibers discovered on Joe's body indicated that she had come into contact with Vincent's black coat and his silver Renault Megane, which is his car.
The boot, yeah.
Yes. Samples found behind the knees of her jeans indicated she may have been held by the legs as she was carried.
Oh.
Like, you know, scooped under the legs and under the arms.
Like a sleeping toddler.
Yeah. They were like, okay, this one spot of DNA isn't enough, so we're going to add the fibers. We're going to add the touch DNA from behind her legs.
Uh-huh.
And the court was then horrified to hear that after killing Joe... He texted his girlfriend to say, "Miss you loads, it's boring here." Yeah.
What a dick.
Yep. Forensic scientist Tanya Nicholson explained that they had found blood on the top of the wall near where Joe's body had been found on Longwood Lane.
Okay.
This indicated Vincent had tried to lift Joanna's body and put it over the wall, but this weak little man was unable to do so. Haha. So instead, he placed her body in a fetal type position on the snow and covered it with leaves.
Man.
If he'd been successful and put her over the wall, who knows how long.
She wouldn't have been found.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I guess, yeah, like this was near the road and that was just woods.
Mm-hmm. Nobody looks behind the wall.
Yep. After returning home, Vincent told the jury he disposed of the missing pizza and sock in an industrial wheelie bin. Which is a trash can.
Oh, wheelie bin.
The police would never find them.
Oh.
Which...
Yeah. I mean, look at the...
Yeah. When they searched all of those tons, that's what they were looking for.
Mm-hmm.
He also divulged that he'd used his landlord as a scapegoat and tried to frame him for murder.
Well, duh.
Yep. In the court, Vincent Tallback used the opportunity to apologize for putting Joanna's family through, quote, a week of hell.
Mm-hmm.
More like a lifetime, man. Just a week. Yes. Like, come on.
Like forever.
Yeah.
That's forever hell.
Just like, sorry you didn't know where she was for a bit. No. That's literally it. He was apologizing because from the 19th to the 25th, they didn't know where she was.
That's so sad.
Yeah. The prosecution also told the jury that whenever Vincent was alone, he would go online following up on the developments of the murder case, researching the collection times, the garbage collection times, and looking at the location of the body, like Google Earth, as well as looking up body decomposition times. So pretty much just like always.
Wow, we know that Google Earth is not updated daily, right?
I know, right? Yeah. So it's like, was he checking it out or was he like, yeah, that's where it is.
Oh, that's so sick.
Mm-hmm. So the jury, made up of 6 men and 6 women, went out to deliberate on October 26th and returned with a verdict 2 days later.
Okay.
On October 28th, 2011, Vincent Tabak was found guilty of Joanna Yeats' murder by a 10-2 majority verdict.
Good.
He was jailed for life with a minimum term of 20 years.
Okay.
After the trial...
Oh, just 20? That's it?
I know. After the trial, it emerged that pornographic images of children had been found on Vincent's laptop.
So time was added.
And December 2013, they announced that he would be prosecuted for possessing these images. And on March 2nd, 2015, he pleaded guilty to possessing more than 100 indecent images of children.
Child porn. What an... Oh, sicko.
Yeah, but he was sentenced to 10 months in prison to run concurrently.
Oh, bummer.
Which means at the same time as his existing life sentence.
Damn.
Yeah.
I hope the girlfriend isn't with him anymore.
Oh, no way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It kept saying, like, his ex, but at the time they were together, so I've been saying currently.
Run for the hills.
Yeah.
Good.
Actually, prior to Joe's murder, they had discovered on his computer a lot of violent porn.
Oh.
Yes. Images of women being bound and gagged, held by the neck and choked.
Oh.
But they were not included in the prosecution case because the judge believed it did not prove that he had acted with premeditation.
Mm.
But like...
That sounds premeditated to me.
Yep. He saw it and then did it. So...
That's sad.
Her funeral was February 11th, 2011 at St. Mark's of Ampthill, Hampshire.
Okay.
The Landscape Design Prize is awarded in Joe's memory by the University of Gloucestershire School of Landscape and Environment annually, and her boyfriend Greg set up a page for donations in her memory for the charity of missing persons. Aww. So
Greg's a good guy.
Yeah. Also, the other victim here, Christopher Jeffries, in 2013, a two-part series starring Jason Watkins in the leading role, The Last Honor of Christopher Jeffries, aired in December 2014.
Oh.
In May 2015, it won 2 awards at the 2015 British Academy Television Awards. Best miniseries for the program itself and best for Watkins' portrayal of Jeffries.
Oh, wow.
So he was kind of
vindicated,
revealing it.
Oh
yeah,
yeah.
So yeah, crazy.
That's so sad.
There were beautiful things to the end, but yeah, literally it was her first weekend away,
first weekend alone
at a new place that she'd lived for 2 months, and her neighbor killed her.
That's just sick.
So messed up.
And I wonder, did she invite him in or did he knock and she let him in?
Right? It could definitely have been something as like knock, knock, knock. And then I'm sure that you saw him around. You're like, hey, he's got a girlfriend.
Hey, neighbor.
Yeah. He might be kind of weird, but whatever.
He's alone.
Like, hey, neighbor. And then bam.
He's alone and had sick.
Yeah.
Urges.
Right? He went grocery shopping with her in the trunk and then afterwards picked his girlfriend up in the car he just used to transport the body.
That's so crazy.
Ah!
Oh, sick.
Yes. So ruined Christmas that year. Crazy story.
Crazy.
Make sure that you guys listen to your mothers this holiday season. Drink up your naughty or nice drinks. You need it.
And make good choices.
Stay nosy, neighbors, and be good neighbors. This was a bad neighbor.
Yes, be good neighbors. That was a bad neighbor.
That was a bad neighbor. Be good neighbors.
Cheers. And Merry Christmas or Happy Christmas. And I'm sure your tree's been up since Thanksgiving.
Speaking of trees, I saw this, you know, Pitch Perfect 2.
Yes.
The German guy, his name is Flula. Mm-hmm. And he was on something and talking about how Americans put up our trees much too early.
Because they're dead by Christmas Day.
Yes. He's like, if someone invited you to a pizza party, would you show up 28 days early? It was funny because then he was like, what kind of tree does that? Maple? Not a maple, not a whatever, just the pine, the Christmas pine in America.
Pine. It's why they're so flammable by Christmas Day.
Right? That's why there's so many house fires. They're dry because I guess elsewhere they don't put it up the day after Thanksgiving. That is very much an American thing.
Yes. Happy Christmas, Kylie.
Yes. I know, the merry versus happy, so strange. Thank you for joining us.
I'm Mary.
I'm Kylie.
And you've been listening to Sipping with Snapped, a true crime podcast.
Be sure to follow us on our Instagram at Sipping with Snapped,
Twitter at Sipping Snapped,
Facebook, Sipping with Snapped, a true crime podcast.
Join our Patreon, Sipping with Snapped.
And if you forget all that, go to our website,
www.sippingwithsnapped.com.
We've got links to everything.
Cheers.
Logan, say I love you.